Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
The analogy is, if you could put money into a business and get 70% off your income based on what you put into the business, you don't have to run the business. It runs for 20 years and you make about 15 to 18%. Would you be interested in the business? No one has ever said no to that. Now, back into it, what is that? There is, from 1940-something, tax code that allows, if it's properly put together, if you put money into an oil and gas program that's properly put together, you get to write off 70% or more of what you invested.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
This is it. Don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story, out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
I'm laughing at the beginning of this one. Welcome back to Capital Hacking, but I'm just thinking about the show we just did with Frederick Huebler. Now, some of us know him as Fred Huebler. Really great guy, a wealth strategist. I think you're going to really love that about him. Really creative ideas and just an out-of-the-box thinker. I love it. Wait till you hear the great story about how he was originally mistaken for Michael J. Fox back in the 80s and 90s. I love that story, buddy. Fred, I love that story. In the meantime, he's going on to create an incredible career. And most of us know him as the guy who has his pulse on so many alternative investments and ideas that are bigger than just, oh, put your money in a mutual fund. As a matter of fact, he debunks mutual funds. Wait till you hear how he the statistic he gives on the overlap of funds. Wait till you see that. I found it very compelling. Actually, a mind bender. So more than all that, the guy is a great father, married 25 years to his lovely wife, Elizabeth. And get this, he has 10-year-old twins, James and Abigail. I love that. I love this guy. And he loves his Tesla. You remember how all these years we've been joking on the Capital Hacking podcast that everybody doesn't even need to drive their car because it's a Tesla? Well, you know, I don't even actually have a Tesla. Okay, I'm not cool enough for a Tesla, but this guy is cool enough for a Tesla. So feel free to ask him about that if you ever run into him. But in the meantime, sit back, enjoy an alternative investing journey, kind of like audio mastermind here with our good friend, Fred Huebler. Cheers. Well, today is a special treat. Glad to be here with my buddy, Fred. Now, Fred, by the way, I'm looking at your name. It says Frederick. This is Fred Huebler. Welcome to the show, Fred.
Yes. Thank you. Fred's fine. Frederick's my professional name, and Frederick's my stage name, and Fred is my friend.
Do you go
name,
by so Frederick? Like, so your business card's going to say
really.
Frederick?
My business card says Frederick. All my licenses say Frederick, but it's easier to have it say Frederick and say, no, call me Fred, than go the other way around. So I just keep the name. It is my name, and I'll just, tell everyone to call me Frederick. So no one calls me Frederick unless you're mad at me.
I do love
unless
that.
You're my parents.
I've actually never met a man named Frederick, goes by Frederick, but I've met Freds before. But I've always loved getting to know you. It's been 3-4 years.
Yes.
Quick backstory. You were the guy, you and I know this, but the team doesn't, who's listening. When we were looking into GoBundance in 2018, and someone said, you should inquire about joining GoBundance. And it was Fred who interviewed me and put me through the ringer to see if I was qualified to join. And I took that it was a big honor to get to know you back then. And we live in the same region and we see each other every couple months, I would say, one of our events. So,
and you got into GoBundance. So you passed the ringer.
I got through the ringer, but thank you so much, buddy. Thank you so much for everything you did there for me. I want to hear the backstory. You know, I know you've done podcasts in your life. I know you're great on screen. I know you're a great teacher, educator, but that's not your day job. Fred, what is your day job for the audience? And tell us a little more about you and where you came from as well.
So the day job and who I am kind of go hand in hand. I was grown to be an executive in my head. I grew up with watching Family Ties. In high school, I looked a little bit like Alex B. Keaton.
Oh, absolutely. You
me
do,
and
by
my
the way.
Family went to Universal back in the 80s, and every family that wasn't American were taking photos of me, and I didn't know why. My dad's like, I think they think you're Michael J. Fox. It was so bad. This is fine. I don't share this with everybody. At the time, there was a Back to the Future ride, and so we go to watch the ride, and I get tapped on my shoulder, and I turn around. There's a gigantic security guard, and he's in his ears like, Roger that. And he looked at me. He's like, we won't bother you. And so in the Back to the Future ride, you had to pick, you know, audience participation, and they picked everybody away from me. So the guy, security guard, talked to the fake Marty McFly that was up there, whoever was up there. And, I didn't get picked. And I think I wouldn't have gotten picked because they thought I was coming like on the QT to see the ride. So that started my, you know, trying to be an executive, and I worked for a Fortune 500 company. Long story short, left to do investments, and my first day was 9/11. So I'm in Valley Forge, and there's two companies in Valley Forge, a gigantic company called Vanguard, and then me. Like, that is pretty much the two companies in Vanguard. So, you know, I'm sure there's others, but I don't know about them. So when I started my own investment, I lasted 2 years at this big brokerage firm. 9/11's happening. My license had a 2 week hiatus because they had to wait until the market opened. You remember there was a week off, and then everything got backed up. Long story short, whenever Brent have an MBA, was in finance before I did this move, and whoever I called during my first week in business, the answer to the question of what do I do now for my clients was their product. The annuity guy says, now's the best time for the annuity. The American Fund guy's like, well, you got to buy Capital, you know, Capital Builder of America. And then I realized, crap, I just became a sales guy. Like, I have an MBA. Right. I'm going to do planning. I'm going to do what's right. So I lasted 2 years. Like, I really did try to be a want to buy bond, want to buy stock. And when I left, I'm a hardworking, smart MBA and probably hardworking, smart, lazy MBA. So I don't want to reinvent the wheel. So when you Google how the wealthy get wealthy, and you touch on this in your show as well, it's not the normal thing. It's not just put it into a mutual fund and hope it works. And so in the world, it was always coming back. Harvard and Yale were and are the poster children on how the wealthy get wealthy and don't lose their shirt when everyone else is naked. So when I went independent, I'm in Vanguard's backyard and I can't do what they're doing. So 18 years ago, I decided to do alternatives because that was the one thing I could do that they weren't doing. And it was something I could understand. It was very close to how Harvard and Yale, you know, manage. So 18 years later, that's kind of where I got, you know, how I got where I'm at. And the interesting thing, the reason, you know, I'm going to go abundance and everything is the idea I had about 4 years ago was to say, you know what? There's people out there that have a lot of money. It's not investable. It's in their businesses. It's in Renault. It's in syndication. Like, it's out there in things that it should be in, but they still have questions. They still have someone to work with, and everyone and those types of people are surrounded by salespeople. Because they bought insurance from this guy, they bought maybe an annuity from this guy, and they bought maybe long-term care from another guy or girl, could be girls. So 4 years ago, having a cigar, which was one of my few vices, and my wife says I get a look in my eye that she'll never ask me what I'm thinking again. Because twice she's asked me, once I said I want to end hunger in my town, and now I run a food pantry on my spare time for free, and we fed 45,000 people last year. Wow. And so that's, you know, it was there before I got there, but I took it over and we kind of, you know, 10X'd it. And then the second, I guess it's a vacant look. I don't know. I never see what I look like. But the second time she's like, what are you thinking of? I said, I think I'm going to change the way advice is given. And the outcome of that is we now have a family office type structure where any client can bring any sentence with a dollar sign and a question mark comes to us, but we charge a retainer and let them keep the money where it is. So deals like yours are good deals. We tell them, oh, go do that with Josh. He's going to do, you know, for that piece of money, there's no better place to do it.
Yeah. I got to interrupt you a couple times. Sense? Yeah. No, I mean, well, I want to dissect it so that you used a couple expressions that if you don't mind, I'm sitting here driving around. I don't have a Tesla like you do, Fred, but we're listening to this podcast and I'm like, Fred says so many cool things, but there were a few comments. I wanted to make sure I understood what he meant. So I'm going to try to go back. Real quick, you said when you first got into financial advising, you came to learn that it was really salesman And so I want you to teach us what that means in a moment. And that you're do you want to buy a bond? Okay, so we'll get to that in a minute, because I don't even think many of us understand that or know that. Two, you said, when I started looking around the way the wealthiest get wealthy, it's actually not by dropping money in mutual funds. Okay. And you said, maybe I should look at how Harvard and Yale do it. And what you meant, I believe, because you're just speaking, you know, kind of like very cut into the chase. You mean their investment money, not their students or their
foundations.
Their yes. foundation.
They have a foundation. So we'll do the second one first. The foundation is almost always the top of Barron's, or you name the magazine, whoever's in charge of Harvard or Yale, they're on the cover saying, here's what they did. And they did storage before it was sexy. They did private equity before we even knew about it. Now they don't, foundations in general, not just them, but most foundations, they don't die and they don't pay taxes. So if you or any of your listeners figure that out, I'll come work for them and we'll take over the world. And they also, because they don't die, they can buy land outside of San Francisco and wait 50 years for it to be the greater metropolitan Sam. We don't have that kind of time frame. So when I look at what they did, I had to then, you know, adjust it for us mere mortals that do pay taxes and do die eventually, and what's appropriate for them. And so the themes you can get from their annual reports, which are public, that is part of our special sauce. And then the access, I never realized until I was in it, how access to the institutions that actually deploy the capital, how valuable that is. At GoBundance, every time I go to an event, there's always a, you know, high producing other financial advisor from a different firm, and they come over, they say, can I buy you a beer? And the conversation, I know what it's going to be before they even say it. And the conversation is 100%, you know, I explain what I do, how I do, and who the partners are. And it ends with, if my clients knew what you did, they wouldn't be my clients. That's how, because they're captive in the way that their insurance company does insurance or their company does it. And so I'm private, I'm independent, I'm a hybrid by choice, because that's the only way I can actually get where I need the clients to be. So if they charge a retainer, if we charge a retainer, they don't have to give us any money. We'll just, you know, tell them where to. We're one of the few roles where I can ask a woman her age without being slapped, and professionally tell anybody where to stick their money. I can tell you where to stick it, because that's my, you know. So that was, you know. So going back to the first one.
Yeah, what's the contrast? Yeah, because some of us didn't even know that's a contrast. You got to help us.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Yeah, so the I would start every morning at the firm, and it's a name it doesn't matter who the name is, but it's a name that they're almost all set like this. And I was running my own practice, and I felt, you know, good. And on the top of the printer was a list of my clients, and at the time it was Merck, the stock Merck, the company Merck. So I'm young enough to not know better to call the investment committee, and I call them up. You know, it's an 800 number. Any questions? I'm like, hey, my dad's on this list and I have every dollar he's ever put away. So how do you know Merck is the right for him? Like I was really honestly answering, like almost naively, is there some modeling behind the scenes? And the answer was more simple and blunt. He has cash. This is our stock of the week. Really? So how do you know how much someone should have? Well, they're never going to buy more than they want. Wow. I mean, that was not what I thought I was getting into. You know, I never took an MBA course that says, hey, just show people stuff and they'll buy what they want to buy. And there's people that make a great living doing that, and I'm sure they're good stock pickers. I wanted to be done. I wanted to have a certain size practice. And frankly, I didn't like the commission part of what I did, because if you bought a stock, I made a commission. If it didn't do well and you wanted to get out, I still made a commission. I made a commission both times for you, and you may have lost money. I didn't feel that was fair. So I lasted two years, went independent, and built my entire thesis off of finding access to these outside things. And I was, for 14 years, a regular fee-based advisor that had alternative investments as part of our options. The cigar look I had 4 years ago was the retainer idea. And so that now has gotten us into 28 states, blew up my office in a good way. We have three times the amount of staff, and we're being engaged with people worth $10, $20, $30, $40 million because they don't have a family office, because all of their money isn't in one plot. It's all over the place, as it should be. And so they can sell everything and bring it over to a family office and then have that. But then the family office is kind of stuck putting them in stocks and bonds, which is now the worst, probably not the best investment. I won't say the worst, but probably not the best investment.
Yeah. And you tripped into another cool thing we want to learn about. So I spend a lot of time with Richard Wilson, family office, and I go to his events, and which is really just a whole new world for us to understand better. And there's this type of conversation that happens all the time. They're like, I'm Bill Smith from a single family office. And then it's Jack Dwyer from a multi-family office. So could you help me understand how you fit into that world? Would you call your type of organization a multi-family office, or am I totally confused?
We have hundreds of families that hired us. Every family that came with me during the last 14 years, we never got rid of. So as our game plan, as our strategies became more and more for the affluent and the accredited, we kept, I have a full-time person whose only job is what I consider the legacy clients. They got me here. They trusted me when I wasn't in the Wall Street Journal. And I don't care how much money they have or don't have. I'm taking a bullet for them. I will do whatever it takes. So some of those clients, we would not necessarily, if we met them today, say yes to them. We'll tell them go to Vanguard, but they're here. They love us. We love them. So from a family office, if you're a single family office, you're doing money for someone who has enough money to dedicate the entire office on it. So, a Rockefeller, a Kennedy, any of those big guys, those families have a single family office where they have me on staff to do that. I've grown my office to the point where I'm kind of a client of my own. My family is a client of my own family office. We don't need any more clients. This is why I have some time to talk to friends like you. Not that we're not saying no to clients, but we're not pushing it. Like, we are very happy where we are. And when I see something I like and it's good enough for me, it's probably good enough for any of the wealthy families that hired us to at least say, hey, here's something I'm doing personally. Would you be interested? You don't have to do it, but our job is, as a fiduciary, I can't not show you things I think could fit. So we would be a family office. The difference would be most family office required assets to be with them, to engage them, to give you advice. We're different. We can have your assets be at Vanguard, where I'm not charging anything because I'm charging you a retainer. And as long as you show me what you have, I can tell you where to stick it, and it's still in your name. So we have clients with millions of dollars at Vanguard. So we count that as assets under advisement. But we're not charging 1%. And a lot of, I think that the elephant in the room is a 60-40 portfolio with me in normal stuff and a 60-40 portfolio you do yourself at Vanguard. It'll have the same performance, except for mine will be muted by whatever my fee is. An advisor doesn't magically know this sector next year is going to be the hottest sector. If they knew that, they wouldn't be working for you. They'd have their own island and they would, they would not be worrying about trying to get clients. So knowing that that's the world we live in, I look at, well, what's the most likely thing to happen? And that's where private equity, private debt, real estate, like all the things that you and I take for granted as being wealth builders, that's not where the environment that people invest in, that's not where they make money. So you're never going to see, private real estate in your 401k.
That's a really good point, actually. So I would imagine there's thousands and thousands and thousands in every city of people called financial advisors. I mean, every 22-year-old kid gets offered a job from Ameriprise or whatever, right? Yeah. Just cold call everybody. So there's all these people that might be getting certified by licensed by the SEC with those different credentials. And they're primarily being told a stock to sell you or a mutual fund to put you in. So it is, there's actually another fundamental thing is they're talking about the buy low, sell high, no cash flow, wait forever. So let's shift the conversation to cash flow. In your world, you're making a retainer based on someone's family's worth, I imagine. You set a retainer based on how much advisement they need. I guess that's kind of how you
Yeah. So retainers typically starts at $8,000 a year. We charge $2,000 a quarter. And that gets them in our program. So one of the funny stories, I have a CRM for everyone. Everyone has a CRM. My wife sees it, so she can see if I have to dress up or I can wear. And so this is before COVID. She had asked me, why am I meeting with the breakfast sandwich people? I'm like, what are you talking about? So I look up and I have a meeting with Morningstar, but it wasn't Morningstar breakfast sandwich. It was Morningstar, Morningstar. And so I immediately thought that, okay, they maybe are trying to sell me, you know, the Morningstar workstation, like their Bloomberg terminal type of thing. And my office manager was awesome. She got, you know, it was someone who read an article about our new way of doing advice. And he was calling to compliment me on seeing the future and being able to implement today. And it was interesting to have that kind of, you know, unsolicited stamp of approval. But on our website at the time, I had said all of our stuff was trademarked. It wasn't. I just figured out on the keyboard how to do that little circle and the TM in the middle. So the second I got off the phone with Morningstar, I call a patent attorney. I'm like, hey, I need the trademark retainer-based planning because that's what we're doing. And we call it milestone clarification process. So the guy's like, well, I'm on your website. It looks like everything. I'm like, no, it's not trademark. I just did the F7 or whatever the code was. So we quickly got, I now legally trademarked, and you can't trademark retainer-based planning like you can't trademark, you know, vanilla ice cream, but I trademarked the milestone clarification, and we have four of them: entrepreneur, business owner, high net worth retiree, and working professional. And each of those have the solution set for income. So the working professional doesn't have all the levers as a business owner. So one of the few things they can do is take money from their W-2 and carve it into something that someone else works with them to create value. So whether it's a syndication, like what you're familiar with, or they buy into a DST that does real estate, which we're really big in, it basically is you're handing money, capital off to someone who's going to do something not in the stock market to add value. And that add value might just be sitting in real estate, you know, and getting out in 5 or 6 years and let someone else take over the 20-year lease with an Amazon, if that's an Amazon. So we have the answer to your question depends on where you're coming from. A high net worth retiree may not want, you know, exposure to real estate since they're now unwinding some things. And so that retainer idea allows us to meet the clients where they are, and we don't care where the money goes as long as it's right for them. So people that do what you do, and I respect what you do, and you know this as a fact, we're like, absolutely. Like, we're, you know, it's nothing we get out of it. We don't charge more or less because we you know, either introduce people to things that are out there, or when we see it, we vet it. And like, hey, we Googled everybody. We FINRA background checked. There's no bad actors that we can see. And you need that asset allocation anyway. Most family offices and most other financial advisors, unless they're going to get a cut from giving you or whoever money, they're not going to really recommend, and we're not in that space. Interesting. Most of our clients end up doing something with us through the institutions that we have access to. So Cantor Fitzgerald, CB Richard Ellis, Inland, like big names that are out there that have accredited investments that are never advertised, that are never solicited for. But if our clients are paying us for advice and we see that they need storage or an Amazon distribution or can benefit from a tax credit oil and gas thing, we can make the, you know, we can show them institutional programs, and then we get a finder's fee. So most of our retainer clients do not last the full year, only because they end up wanting private equity, real estate, any of the accredited things we have. They want that. We get paid by the sponsor for you know, doing the due diligence fiduciary. And usually that fee is more than the retainer was anyway. So I don't want to double dip. I just don't want to have someone have to do business with us for us to get paid, because they have questions that the answer may not benefit us and we won't get paid on the answer. Like, sometimes you should have your money in the 529 in your state that isn't an investment. Sometimes you'd have money in cash at the bank. Again, not charging, you know, so the right answer becomes a no-brainer to give the right answer, because we're not looking for products that come back to us, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a little complex, but I get it.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
We've talked about a lot of broad topics, but there's some things that you've taught me that I think we have to dive into, because I've been on these shows, hundreds of shows, been on other people's shows. I don't hear other people other than you talking about them. And you mentioned them again here, but I'm going to ask you to deep dive. So, all right. Summary from an average man's point of view, we all think we're supposed to have money in the Wall Street stock market. Okay. We probably could buy E-Trade software or whatever that would have been and bought $100 worth of something. Then we say, well, maybe I'm not good enough to pick a stock in the sector. Why don't I just buy a mutual fund? So we've all heard of that. But you started introducing to me to things that are famous brand names like Cantor Fitzgerald or other companies, where they also release things that are private and not related to the public markets. And that groups like you and the clients you have, you get access to these. So why don't you take a deep dive into one that you were proud of last year, you thought was good for one or two of your clients, and tell us how that all worked.
And to kind of go back to simplifying it, I'm probably not doing a great job, but as you know, to this day, if you Google best NFL financial advisor, I still show up organically. I never paid for it. I like to say I'm like The Rock, but I have more hair and I'm half the size, because I'm like 5'4" and he's like 54'4". Like, you know, he's a huge guy. So if I can explain these complicated things to, you know, to football players, I can explain them to anybody. So there's one investment I think we can talk about. One that's not open, and I'm not here to solicit anything. But the analogy, I'll tell you the analogy I use for my football players, and I'll back into what really is. So the analogy is, if you could put money into a business and get 70% off your income based on what you put into the business, you don't have to run the business. It runs for 20 years and you make about 15 to 18%. Would you be interested in the business? Now, no one has ever said no to that. Now, back into it, what is that? There is, from 1940 something, tax code that allows, if it's properly put together, if you put money into an oil and gas program that's properly put together, try to say that fast 5 times, you get to write off 70% or more of what you invested. So using $100,000 as a good example, and this answers the question of what's worked. You put $100,000 in, the year you do it, you get to take 70%, and 100% of the time it's more than this, but I'd rather under promise over deliver. So we count it on 7, but it might be 89. It might be, you know, 87, but count on 70%. You can take 70,000 off your income. So that amount that you don't show in your income, that tax that you would have paid is still in your pocket. You know, no one's taking that out. So right there, you've already made money. Now, granted, that's not it. And in the '80s, these things blew up because that's all they did. That first part. We look at income producing vehicles that have that tax credit as an ancillary benefit versus leading with the tax benefit. Because if you're making a decision for taxes, you're making the wrong decision. You're buying a piece of crap because it's in an opportunity zone. You're not making a good decision. Right. 'Cause it's still a crappy business. And that was as clean as I can put that, that concept. So for most clients, when they're in these things, they will get back between the taxes they saved and the distributions, which are taxable, usually between 5 or 6 years, they've gotten back their $100,000.
Nice.
They now have no money in it, and it's going to pay for another 15 years. So in your database or in your spreadsheet, you get a divide by zero error because you've gotten your money out of it. Now, I'm not saying it's an infinite return because there is an end. It's not 15 to 18% the whole ride, because eventually in 20 years, you might only be making 5%, which is still more than any dividend paying stock today. And the whole idea of, you know, stock market today is not being where you want to go. I didn't make that up. About 80% of Harvard and Yale's foundations are not in the market. So we have the smartest kids in the class, not even down the shore at Atlantic City. They're fishing at a lake. And the real reason for it is we all kind of assume the stock market is huge. It's about 3,400 different companies. And when you cherry pick the good ones, there's only about 1,000. There's not many Facebooks or Apples or right. Amazons. So everyone's mutual fund is the same 1,000 things. And we had one guy, he's now a client, $17 million in a bunch of mutual funds. And I had to compliment, you know, so I do the Oreo cookie, the cookie. So I had to compliment him. You have a great, you know, you've built up a great portfolio. But the cream filling was, you're not in anything different than my 9-year-old twins. And of course, his, you know, you tell a $17 million guy that he's in the same thing as nine-year-olds, it went exactly how I thought it would go. What are you talking about? And I explained to him, all of his funds are really in the same thing. And we have software that does it. So we basically, Microsoft was in every one of his 72 different funds. And so he was nowhere near as diversified. And that opens up the question of, well, how do I do something different than your nine-year-olds? Well, my nine-year-olds aren't accredited. So you need to look at private equity, private debt. One of the things I recently, so oil and gas is one thing. The other thing that surprised me, meaning, you know, you think you've seen it all until you see it something new. I know, and I think you know, private companies and public companies. We also know common stock and preferred stock. What I didn't know until 3 years ago was a public company can offer direct to the public through advisors that they trust, and we're now one of them, private preferred stock. So it looks like, you know, really looks like a CD. It's a 5 year hold, 5.5%. So we're not talking, you know, life changing money, but it's with it's a direct IOU with a public company, but it's private, which means the $1,000 par value has no market liquidity, which is a bad thing, but also no market exposure, which is a great thing. And so we have clients say, I don't want to buy a bond. Interest rates are going up. Bonds are going down. I don't want to buy it in stock. I don't need it anytime soon. So I don't really need liquid. So I'll say something like, well, if you could buy a 5.5% CD, would you do it? It's like, oh, absolutely. Like, well, this isn't that, but it looks like it. And then we explain it to them. And 100% of the time, like, all right, let me just put, and the fun part with this, and Josh, this is the best part of my job. I get paid for finding the capital and it doesn't come out of the client's capital. So they put $10,000, $100,000, $1 million in that private preferred stock. Their first statement shows 100%. They're making the 5.5, which is what it is. They have very little liquidity and zero market exposure. And the reason 5 years in my mind is important, the next correction will be in the next 5 years, if not in the next 5 days or 5 minutes. And it gets us through that. And all we're trying to do is get through some patchy roads. We all see storm clouds coming up. We just don't know what kind of storm it's going to be, where it's going to hit. And when everything is in a bubble, we've never had everything in a bubble before. We've had tech stocks in a bubble before by itself. We had house prices in a bubble before by itself. You look around, there's nothing not in some sort of inflated bubble. That can't end well for anybody. Like, it just really can't. And so we're concerned about inflation, which leads us to real estate. Inflation at least won't take that away. Essential retail is another place. Dialysis center, blood plasma. I don't care if you have to be in a hamster ball because of COVID, you're going to the blood plasma center or else you're going to die. I'd like to be a landlord of that. I don't want to run the blood plasma. I don't like, you know, people juices, but I don't mind running, being the landlord. So we find, you know, where that is. And I think the one big thing I want to share with everybody, and I didn't think, I had a thesis, it was like this, and I was always brought up with a, not a chip on my shoulder, but a curiosity of how do the rich get richer? Like, we always see people like, wow, that's really awesome. And I'm happy for them. They didn't, their jet isn't my jet, but how'd they get it? I will be the first one to tell you life's not fair. Like, life is absolutely not fair. And here's a great example. We all see Amazon and Apple as two big companies, and they are. One quarter of Apple was more profit than every quarter of Amazon. Think about that. We're talking back, going back to Amazon when Jeff Bezos had a cardboard box as a desk. All of those quarters added up is still less than one quarter of Apple.
Are you serious? Wow. That's a paradigm breaker right there.
So remember the very first Superman with Lex Luthor? He made his money by rounding the pennies like to the third and fourth decimal point.
Yes.
That is how Amazon makes money. Like, there's a reason you order dental floss on Friday. It shows up on Saturday. You didn't pay more than CVS and you didn't pay shipping. And you probably didn't need it the very next day. It's their distribution. So what's not fair about that is during COVID, March happened. I decided to go into the office because we were homeschooling and I didn't want to be here during homeschooling for mom and dad's on the call. They know. So, but when I would come home, my house and everyone else's house puts 14 boxes on the front step.
Yeah. Right.
So I didn't want to own Amazon as a stock, but I wanted to look at that. And what I found out was most Amazon distribution centers are, Amazon wants to do it. They buy it, but then they do a sale lease buyback to a third party so that they can have money to go do it again.
Right.
And so by the time you see the Amazon sign on the warehouse, they don't own it anymore. And that's not fair. If you want to say, I want to, you know, so we found who that is. We negotiated. We worked with them. We got through FINRA. You know, they had a product that was already going through. So we were like, okay, we now have access to the institutional side of real estate. And at the institutional level, it's not as frothy as the individual level. If you and I are going to buy a duplex in our downtown, we're probably going to buy it with 14 other people that look just like you and I. And one of us is going to have to write a love letter to the duplex to say why our bid's better than anyone else's bid. That's a little frothy, and that's happening. But at the institutional level, not many people are bidding on a $300 million apartment building. Like, it's just, there's less people. So the few things I'd like to leave your, and it doesn't have to do with me, but just—
I love this. This is a great, you've done a great job, Fred. So
thank you.
Before you say, would you summarize the three things that you would like to leave with the Capital Hacking audience?
Yes. Okay. The simplest the thesis, the more likely it works when the you-know-what hits the fan. And I have two examples. If right now the market, stock market thesis, and no one will tell you this, is buy, hold, and hope. Just because I bought Tesla doesn't mean it's my next, you know, things, or Apple or whoever. But if you remember Richard Gere and Pretty Woman, he was private equity. They don't buy Pretty Woman, not just Richard Gere, but private equity in general. They don't buy, hold, and hope. They don't buy a company until they already know what they're going to do to turn it around. So it's almost like what you do and investors like do at the real estate level. They do it at the company level, and has nothing to do with the stock. It has something to do with intrinsic. So private equity has a bad vibe. When someone says, I hate private equity, and you ask them why, they'll say a story like, well, my dad and my grandfather got fired when private equity took over. And then you find out why. Their dad was making $300,000 doing an $80,000 a year job. Well, guess what? Capitalism shouldn't work that way. Private equity are the crabs of capitalism. And so private equity is a simple thesis, and it kind of works. Being a landlord to an Amazon is a simple thesis, and it's going to work no matter what. It's not betting on the stock price. It's betting on, you know, in the next 5 to 6 years, will distribution centers of Amazon's that are just being built still be valuable? And the answer is not only yes, but then in 5 or 6 years, when you get out of the DST, there's an institution that's going to buy it because it was a 20-year lease with Amazon. There's 15 years left of juice left in the squeeze.
You're going to have to tell us what a DST is, but don't do it yet, because I think you have a third one, right?
So I have so many. I don't know where
private equity. You have private equity, institutional real estate.
Any kind of institutional real estate. Amazon's a good example because you can understand it. But the institutional real estate is going to be clicky. You need to know who has access to that and back into how do you get access to that. And it's taken me 15 years to be one of the guys that have access to that. And the interesting thing with the DST is most people fund it by selling real estate and going into it.
What is it? DST. So
a DST stands for Delaware Statutory Trust. And it kind of says that whatever's in the trust, the properties of that get transferred to the partial owners of the trust. So if you have a piece of real estate in the trust, then when you have some money in that trust, your money isn't a REIT. It isn't a syndication. It isn't a limited partnership. It is, from an IRS standpoint, which is the only S that matters, the IRS, you are, it is calculated like real estate.
Yeah.
Which means when it goes to be sold, instead of cashing out and paying capital gains, you can roll it into another, 1031 another DST. But here's the cool thing. We found a way to put cash into a DST. So let's say some of your listeners are professionals and they don't have time. You know, they're giving money to you, but they still have other money. And you know, for whatever reason, they want to diversify. You can add cash into a DST, not from a sale. And that from that moment forward, that cash is now real estate. And the technical term is if you swap until you drop, meaning if you keep exchanging it for another one, you get a day to death step up. So the Amazon distribution center, which I bought when I came, you know, during March, I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? And then offered to our client, joint with me and my wife. At some point, that 100,000 hopefully be worth $1 million when I'm dead, and her and my kids get a day to death step up.
Yeah,
and then all those gains I've never paid.
We're gonna have you back on. I know I took you longer than I promised because you are so compelling, and I want you to. Before we go, there's too many cool things you just threw out there. We're gonna have to bring you back because you're an expert on things that most of our listeners are excited about. Tell us about how to follow up with you, Fred.
So the best thing would be the website, CCWMG. So Cat, William, Mary, Greg. On there, you can see the portals we use. You can also request an SOS. So it's a second opinion service. We don't vet anyone. We will talk to someone that has no money as part of our get, and we'll get talk to someone that does have money. I'm not going to tell you which one I enjoy talking to, but sometimes the guy with no money is more fun to talk to because he's like, hey, what am I going to do? So it's a complimentary review of where they're at. We're in 28 states, and that's only because we have clients, families in 28. We can be in every state if we want to. And my goal is to be in every state, but I want to have a client in every state. So I would love to at least see what people are doing, answer questions. We are alternatives, and we also do the retainer, and it's up to the client which one they need. So we have some clients that have no issues. They have a family office structure. They have a lawyer that did it all, but they have no access to the alternatives. So we'll do 10, 20% of their net worth and alternatives. And we're fine with that. Like, we provide access to that. So ccwmg.com would be the same, would be the best way. Love to come back. I think for your listeners, if they play this back in half speed, they're going to have a nice, relaxing conversation about alternative investments. Guy. And I won't sound like Mickey Mouse, but there's
I
so
like,
much
I
out
like
there.
How you just went into half speed, Fred. You're the best, man. You'll be here till Thursday. Try the roast beef.
No, try I the love veal,
you.
Yeah.
Try the veal or the pork chops this weekend. All right, my friend. Thank you so much, Fred. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put
we
the fire
on. We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility. Woo!